My next guest is Andrea Skalaberg. Am I saying your name right?
Skalaberg? Yes, Skalaberg.
Okay, good. Andrea is a chef, a cookbook author, the former chef and owner of Café Zolo in a town I can't pronounce in Sweden.
It's Höganäs.
Höganäs?
Höganäs.
Höganäs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And we're going to talk about Swedish food and Santa Lucia Day coming up on Sunday and all kinds of stuff like that.
So. Sounds good.
Andrea, we need to make this clear. You are American-Swedish, not Swedish-American.
That's correct, yes.
You're a West Virginia girl?
No, Virginia.
Oh.
Lord, no.
Heaven forbid. So how did you become Swedish, so to speak?
Oh, that's a long story. But I met my husband in Atlanta, and we fell in love.
He's Swedish.
Mm-hmm. And we actually wrote letters to each other for about a year and a half because he had to go back to Sweden and I stayed in Atlanta. So we have about over 300 letters somewhere in a box where we corresponded. And then we decided that it would be best for me to go to Sweden. So he bought me a one-way ticket and there was no looking back.
That's one way to keep your girlfriend around, right?
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
And did you get married right away or did you live in Sweden for a while?
Well, actually, we got married about 2 weeks after I arrived in Sweden, and I'd never been out of the country. I didn't even have a passport before I left. So I became Mrs. Skalaberg, a Swede, all at the same time. It was very exciting.
And you didn't speak Swedish?
Well, I could say, come here, you lazy worm.
How do you say that?
Kom hit, din latmask.
Come here, you lazy worm.
Well, that's what my Swedish friends taught me. It was very, very nice, yes.
So in Sweden at that time, I mean, that would have been, what, 30 years ago?
30 years ago. Mm-hmm.
Did everyone speak English?
They did, and they enjoyed speaking their English. So I had to actually, when I took Swedish, I had to, when I was out and about in Stockholm, I had to pretend I couldn't speak English. Because as soon as they heard that I was American or had an English accent, they wanted to speak English. So I just pretended I couldn't speak English.
Because otherwise it inhibited your ability to learn the language.
Yes, absolutely.
So you took formal classes and all of that.
I did. Back in that time, they actually paid immigrants to take Swedish so that they could, you know, so that we would join the workforce and become citizens.
Assimilate,
exactly. Uh-huh. And it was great fun because we were probably 30, 35 different nationalities, and our teacher was just wonderful. So we just plunged right in.
And I hear through the grapevine that your Swedish is so good that most people don't know you're American now when you speak Swedish.
That's true, except when I'm very tired or nervous, like right now. So the come here lazy worm was not perfect.
That's great. So how did you become a chef? How did you end up becoming a cook?
Well, I always enjoyed, I wasn't really a cook when I was younger. I just watched my grandmother and my mother, and I loved baking. I loved making cookies and cakes, and I had a little catering business for cakes when I was a teenager. And then when I moved to Sweden, of course, honed those skills, baked a lot, did a lot of social events, did a lot of catering. And then when I started working as a teacher, I used a lot of cooking in my teaching.
What grade were you teaching?
I taught the entire student body at a small Montessori school, from kindergarten to ninth grade, English, actually. Mm-hmm. And so I used that a lot in our, you know, I would give them a recipe and we would do things together. And I think the moment I decided I wanted to be a chef was one of my students. She held my hand and she said, I love you, Andrea, you smell like a cupcake.
That's a great line.
And so I decided one day, if I ever had the chance, I would open a cafe.
Uh-huh. And so, how long did you teach?
I taught for 9 years.
And you had children along the way, too.
I did. Uh-huh. So I taught all three of my children.
In your school?
In my school.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's one way to keep them under control.
Absolutely, yes.
In the classroom. Yeah. So tell me about how you decided to have a cafe.
Well, after I love teaching, I love the kids, but I felt like I wanted to do something different after 9 years. I didn't feel like I was the teacher that I was in the beginning. So the opportunity arose. There was a little cafe in town, and they were looking for someone to take over, and I really had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know anything about running a cafe.
You'd never worked in a cafe.
Well, I, you know, in high school.
Like been a waitress in a restaurant
or
something.
Uh-huh. But nothing like this, and nothing of this scale where you have to get up early in the morning, bake the bread, and, you know, make all the cakes, and prepare a lunch menu, and sort of do the guesswork about how much, you know, the quantities and things like that. So it was very exciting. I actually put a sign on my cash register, and it said student driver.
In Swedish.
In Swedish.
How do you say that?
Övning, körning. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is your voice gets a little softer.
I know.
When you're speaking
I know.
Swedish. Yeah. Yeah. So, were you open all day or just for lunch? Or
from 11 to 5 every day.
So, did that means you basically served lunch?
Yes, and cakes. Yeah. Because for the Swede, the afternoon coffee, which is called fika, it's holy. I mean, you have to have your coffee and your cake or your cinnamon bun or whatever.
It's like Brits and tea?
Exactly.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So it's in the mid-afternoon, late
about
afternoon?
About 2-ish, yeah.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So you'd have a crowd of people who came for lunch, and then you'd have the tea crowd or the coffee crowd.
The coffee crowd, yes.
The coffee crowd later.
That was great fun.
It was great fun?
Yes.
It sounds like hard work.
It was, well, you know, 12, 13-hour days, but it was like a little cultural meeting point in our town, and we had a writing group, and we had poetry readings, and we had music every on Saturdays, and it was just a great way to bring people together.
And
but
where,
it was hard work.
Where is this town in Sweden?
It's in the south of Sweden. Uh-huh. We're actually closer to Copenhagen than to Stockholm,
uh-huh,
in Denmark. So you can the port city is called Helsingborg, and you can take the ferry over to Helsingør, and that's where Hamlet's castle is.
Oh my!
So we're down south on the ocean.
Uh-huh. Mm. Yeah, and so why was it Café Solo?
Well, the café was called Café Solo when I took over. And they had an established, you know, clientele and a customer base, and I just felt like I'll just keep that name. And I think it's sort of a play on words, because the family was Lorentzen with a Z, and they had spent a lot of time in Barcelona, and Café Solo is a single shot of espresso.
Oh, Café Solo.
Solo.
Yeah, got it. Oh, got it. I'm a little slow, but you know, I do catch up. And what was your food like? It wasn't all Swedish, was it?
No, it was quite the mix. And lots of vegetarians who didn't feel like they had any place to go came to the cafe. So I catered quite a bit to vegetarians.
Are you a vegetarian?
No, I'm not a vegetarian, but I'm a flexitarian. But I really enjoy making vegetarian food because it's such a challenge. You know, it's easy to put some meat and cream in a pot and make something wonderful, but it takes a little more imagination to do the vegetarian dishes.
However, if you'd never done this before, however did you even make up a menu, or did you cook the same things every day, or?
No, there was always a soup of the day.
Uh-huh.
We had a basic sandwich menu because the Swedes love their shrimp.
Oh.
They have to have their shrimp sandwich. Oh. So that stayed on the menu from the previous owners. And I just had fun with taste. I've always had this knack for tastes.
Mm-hmm.
So just tried new things, and there were some disasters, of course. Yeah, we had a great bookshop down the street, and I made some sort of cauliflower walnut soup, and the owner came in and he said, please don't ever make that soup again.
Cauliflower walnut.
Yes, it was brown. It
Ooh.
Was awful.
Ooh, Yeah, well, I love your cookbook, and I've actually cooked several things out of it very successfully and impressed my friends.
Great.
It's really an interesting cookbook because you arranged it by the day of the week that you were open. So
mm-hmm.
It sort of talks about what you did every day and what you made. And the photography is beautiful.
Well, thank you.
And who did the photography?
My husband did the photography, Gordon Skellberg. He's an artist. And he also did the layout. And he had great luck because he took all the pictures in our cafe in the same little window. And there was actually sunshine in Sweden during those months, which was wonderful.
So they aren't. It's interesting because they're beautiful photographs, and they look as if they might have been professionally lit, but instead they were just shot
in natural light. Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's great. So I have made, this is one of my favorite recipes, the chocolate truffle cake, aka the what to do when you accidentally make too much truffle dough cake.
That's it. Yeah, that was a boo-boo.
Yeah, I made this for a party recently, and everyone was so impressed. They thought I was a gourmet cook.
Great. I'm happy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did they say y'all in Sweden?
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So how did you end up here in Santa Fe?
Well, my husband and our boys drove through about 10 years ago, and I was spending time with my sister in Los Angeles, and Gordon, my husband, called, and he said, I could live here. And I said, where are you? And then when we decided to, our children have moved out, and I closed the cafe last summer.
Due to exhaustion?
Yes. Yes, definitely. Yeah. So we just decided to do something different, and Santa Fe is city different, so it was perfect for us.
So are you here all the time now, or just part of the time?
Just part-time, mm-hmm. Yeah. We've actually never spent more than 2 or 3 months here at a time. We've never spent a summer in Santa Fe. Mm-hmm. So that's something we're looking forward to.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's actually good to be here during the winter, too, isn't it, compared to this Swedish winter?
Oh, I love the light and just the sunshine. We had 3 hours of sunshine in November last year.
Wow.
And that can be quite depressing.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's funny because I think of Swedes and Scandinavians in general, and I'm sure this is entirely stereotypical, but I think of Swedes as very healthy people.
They're always out. And yeah. when our children were young, we would just, wrap them up and put a reflector vest on them and take them out in the afternoon because there was no sun. So we could find them at the playground. And always outside, always spending time outside. And as soon as the sun comes out, like in the spring, you'll see Swedes with their noses to the ground looking for those little first spring flowers. It's just very important.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very much more attached to light. We take it so for granted here.
Yeah.
But for most people who live here, who've come here from somewhere else at least, I think there is a general agreement that the light is one of the things that keeps us here.
I think so.
You know, I love looking at Facebook in the mornings because if there's been a good sunrise, everybody's been out with their camera and posted the pictures to Facebook.
And they're all beautiful.
Right, they are, yeah. It's kind of good because even if you sleep in, you get to see what it looked like.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons I had you on today was because you had told me about this Swedish holiday that I didn't really know about, that's kind of a big deal. So, Sankta Lucia.
Sankta Lucia.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So tell us about Sankta Lucia Day.
Well, it's celebrated on the 13th of December, and originally the day was dedicated to Saint Lucia from Syracuse, Sicily. And there are a lot of legends about Lucia. I think one of the legends is that, she was brought to Sweden by missionaries.
Oh.
And mostly to celebrate light, because the that first Sunday...
Oh, I thought you meant literally. I was going to say, she literally came to Sweden?
No, she didn't. She never came to Sweden. And it's a strange thing, because it's a Catholic tradition, and Swedes are Lutherans. But I think it's just, we embrace anything that has to do with light. Mm. And Christmas season is full of light and celebration, lots of festivities. So this Lucia is celebrated on the 13th, and the old tradition, the daughter of the household would come down as Lucia, dressed in her white gown with a red sash and a crown of candles, real candles.
Like a wreath that had candles
burning.
Wreath of
evergreens, and, yes. Uh-huh. And then her court, if she had siblings, her sisters would be, her court, and her brothers would be what they call Lucia boys or star boys, stjärngossar. And I don't know many families that do that today, but it's celebrated in schools, so there will be a procession of Lucia, and they will even have gingerbread boys in attendance. So it's quite the thing, and they'll serve their wonderful saffron buns, coffee, ginger snaps, and this mulled wine. Well, non-alcoholic in the schools, of course, called glug.
Glug.
Mm-hmm.
And what spices go in glug?
Cardamom, orange, some people put ginger in it, lots of red wine, and sugar. you warm.
So on Santa Lucia Day, you would have this big evening celebration, and it's, what did you tell me about December 13th, that, by legend, it's supposed to be the
darkest night of the year, actually. So this is a morning tradition.
A morning? You do this in the morning?
Very early in the morning, yes. In fact, this week is the Nobel Prize week in Stockholm. And they even have a court of Lucia girls and boys who awaken the Nobel Prize winners at their hotel and sing the traditional Lucia songs. Yeah.
What's a traditional Lucia song sound like?
I don't think I want to subject your listeners to that.
You're not a singer?
not in the morning. No, it's a very it's an old Italian melody actually. It's been translated
into Swedish.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting. So Santa Lucia Day actually doesn't have anything to do with Christmas. It just happens to fall at this time of the year, and it's sort of, I mean, it would be the equivalent of us having the Feast of Guadalupe, which happens to be on December 8th, right? Is not, you know, isn't directly related to Christmas. It's just the feast day of that saint.
Right.
And so Lucia is always in the pictures of Saint Lucy, or Lucia. She's the one who, one of the stories, the legend about her has to do with her eyes. And that's where the connection to the light, isn't that right, comes from?
Well, there is that legend that, that because of her Christian beliefs and her visions, her eyes were gouged out. And the blood is, the red sash represents the blood. And the white is her gown, is her purity. But there's also a story that say that in death she was transfigured in an intense light.
Ah.
So there, you know.
It's, she's associated with light on more than one level. Yeah. The other optional story about St. Lucy is that not that her eyes were gouged out by her when she was martyred, but that she gouged out her own eyes because she was looked upon lasciviously by, because of her beauty, because her eyes were beautiful, and that, so she gouged them out herself. So sometimes when you see imagery of St. Lucy, you know, she's got the plate. She holds a plate in front of her with her own eyes.
Oh, my. That doesn't sound as good as the saffron bun.
No. No, we like the saffron bun, white dress with the red sash version.
Much better. Much better.
But, you know, there's always that sort of darker tale that has to do. I mean, after all, to become a saint, you almost generally have to be martyred.
Yes, that's true. That's true.
So, yeah.
But I wonder if many Swedes know that legend. I think for them it's just this celebration of life,
of
this
light.
Beautiful young girl, you know, in her crown of candles.
I got to play her one time in some friends would always have a solstice party with a midwinter play, and we would draw the names of who we were going to read the part in the play. And I got to be Santa Lucia one time. Mm-hmm. And indeed, I had a wreath with four candles in it lit. And let me tell you, it's a little bit unnerving to walk around with lit candles on your head.
It is. I think they're battery driven. The modern ones.
The modern ones, yes. Mine
absolutely.
Were real. But
oh, my.
So if you were going to have a party or something for Santa Lucia Day, what would you make besides glug?
Well, the saffron bun, which I've brought you today.
Oh, you brought me one?
I did. This is the prototype, so I'm going to have to work on that. You know, this high-altitude baking is something.
Oh, yeah. You've had to learn how to
absolutely
do things here.
And then I brought you, it's a Swedish candy. It's called Cola, which is not Coca-Cola. It's like a caramel that you make.
Oh, my gosh.
The traditional Santa Lucia is just the saffron bun or the ginger snap. But it's sort of a kickoff for the Christmas season. So if I were to throw a party, I would sort of serve a traditional Christmas table with you know, the herring, all sorts of herring, salmon, marinated gravlax, potatoes. Actually, this wonderful dish called Johnson's Temptation, Johnson's Frestelse, which is anchovies and cream and potatoes and it's heavy.
You're making me hungry. I know, I want to eat this beautiful saffron bun.
You have to try that
right now. So yeah, how hard has that been to learn to bake?
I've sort of just tested, and a lot of people say, you know, you have to weigh your flour, and you have to I think the time in the oven is what's makes the difference. And this is not as fresh as I would have liked to have been for you.
The saffron bun, it has, so does it have fruit in it?
This one has a filling with brown sugar and orange and Grand Marnier.
Wow.
But the traditional saffron bun is a very plain bun, and it just has the saffron and sugar and vanilla, and it's very simple. It sort of looks like a little S with raisins, and there are all sorts of ways to do it. So,
I'm talking with Andrea Skalberg, a chef, a cookbook author. Her cookbook is called Café Zolo, Irresistible Homemade Goodness. And unfortunately, it's not actually available on Amazon because it's in boxes in Sweden.
Yes,
is that right?
Yes, it is. But in the spring, we're looking to... we're probably going to ship over a few. I only have 500 left. There are 5 here in Santa Fe, but 500 left in Sweden.
If someone's dying to have one, like right now, can they get one from you?
Yes, absolutely.
How would they do that?
Just drop me a line. Andrea.Skalberg@scribbler.se.
Okay. Scribbler.se.
Yes.
Skalberg, Andrea, AndreaSkalleberg at scribbler.se.
Café
Zolo. What's your favorite recipe in your cookbook?
Oh, my. Well, the...
Or what was your most, classic, most popular thing that you made in your cafe?
It was the lemon curd cheesecake. And I think I made over 3,000 by hand. And I used to do my own butter dough, but I started getting lazy and... My thumb started hurting, so I use the shortbread cookie dough.
Oh.
But this is a recipe that I actually made up. It's sort of a it reminded me of my favorite ice cream when I was growing up, the Dreamsicle.
Oh yeah.
So it's a very creamy. It's the you bake the dough, but you don't bake the cake itself. You just whip it up, and then you can make a homemade lemon curd, which I've done many times. So that cake, if I didn't have that cake, people got upset.
Uh-huh.
So I had to have that on the menu. But my favorite is my grandmother Nettie's spice cake. And I think it's because it's the only recipe, handwritten recipe, that she left me.
Aww.
And every time I make it, I think of her. So it's a very traditional, I think it's an old Southern recipe. I'm sure every grandmother has her own version
of
it.
One of those, yeah. I'm so struck by the fact that, we have these very healthy things in here, like Mediterranean wrap with shrimp, saffron rice, sun-dried tomatoes and artichokes, and creamy sweet pepper soup with crawfish tails, and then all of these chocolate things.
Yes, I know.
Is that just you, or are Swedes really into chocolate?
Swedes, they love their sweets. They do. They enjoy, they have a great chocolate in Sweden. It's called Marabou. And I actually, when I came to Sweden, I had to taste everything, and I think I gained about 30 pounds the first year.
Really?
Because I had to have everything on the menu, everything, that was the sweet things that were so enticing, bread and the cinnamon bun, and they use a lot of cardamom in their baking.
And so you did most of the baking yourself?
I did all the baking.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
And you bake a lot at your home, don't you?
I love baking. It's sort of therapeutic. And the bread, kneading the bread, it's just, it's nurturing. And I usually do it when I'm supposed to be doing something else important, like writing.
Yes, I failed to say that Andrea is a writer of many things.
Yes.
Besides cookbooks.
Trying anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So tell me about Christmas in Sweden. What would you do for your Christmas dinner?
Well, Christmas is celebrated on the 24th.
Uh-huh. And what we think of as Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve, yeah. So we don't, come down in the morning and open our gifts. It would be on the 24th, and there would be a big Christmas dinner. Some people have ham. There's a special ham with, they use a lot of cloves and a lot of those spices that you'd have in a ginger snap.
Mm-hmm.
Ginger and cloves, cinnamon, things like that. And just basically the standards. They used to have the old, they would have lots of fish dishes.
I would expect fish, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Lots of fish dishes. But if you would go to a restaurant, there's the Christmas table, traditional Christmas table, and it starts with the fish dishes. So you'd have all these marinated herrings, and you'd have salmon, and you'd have shrimp, and things like that. What is lacking on a Christmas table is the dessert. There's not a big dessert for Christmas.
Oh.
They have something called risa la malta, which is like a rice pudding.
Uh-huh.
That's quite boring, actually.
Yeah.
So I usually compensate by making something a little more exciting for the dessert. But that's why they're so slim and trim and healthy.
Yeah. Do they eat a lot of fowl? No. Pheasant or turkey or chicken?
We have, actually, there's a something like Thanksgiving. It's on November 6th. It's the Martin Goose Day. So goose, and actually down south, there are a lot of geese farms.
Uh-huh.
So people do eat goose and duck and chicken. But turkey is not a big thing like it is here.
Interesting.
Yeah. So it's different.
So if you have your Christmas meal and everything, and you don't do the presents on the next day, does Santa come?
I guess he comes in the evening. I'm really not sure. One thing that's really funny about the Swedes is, though, they have a tradition in the afternoon. I think you'll find half the Swedish population glued to TV watching Donald Duck.
Watching Donald Duck?
Yes, a Donald Duck Christmas special.
Wow. Andrea, thank you so much for coming on today. This has been really fun talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, about Swedish cooking and kaffe Zollo and all of that kind of stuff. And
thank you.
Yeah, thanks so much. And thanks for bringing me this lovely saffron bun.
You're welcome.